In the session examining the impact of digital resources on research, Alan Marshall from Bath Spa University speaking on printed sources and texts.
I've listened fascinated by some of the debates today, naturally enough, for an early modern historian like myself and a few others out in the audience, I'm sure, the variety of challenges and opportunities faced by individual historical researchers in light of the impact of digitization on historical texts. Arguably, this new technology enables us to unlock and expand traditional boundaries of research and to release those who undertake it by the extension of access to primary material. Sometimes, occasionally, budgetary limitations can be overcome, research trips, etc. The idea of research itself could possibly even be redefined and changed, linking it into not just research at an academic level perhaps, but into teaching strategies of both undergraduates and postgraduates, where benchmarked ideas of critical analysis and interpretation can take place by letting students loose amongst the primary evidence. But quite a large amount of this did happen. It's happening in increasing terms now. In many respects, this is a sea change, arguably, for a historical researcher, of whatever category. It's akin, akin to that great Victorian explosion in archive use and the development of the many printed aids and assistants that created the scholarship of the later 19th and 20th century. This in mind, I was thinking also of Lord Acton, 19th century historian. In particular, the prospectus of 1898, which was sent to potential contributors to the Cambridge Modern History. It's a text full of resonance for us today. Acton points out, our purpose is to obtain the best history of modern times that the published or unpublished sources of information admit. The production of material, he goes on, has so far exceeded the use of it that very much more is known to students than can be found in historians. And no compilation at second hand from the best works would meet the scientific demand for completeness and certainty. In our own time, he fatally went on, within the last few years, most of the official collections in Europe have been made public, and nearly all the evidence that will ever appear is accessible now. It's a text of resonance, I think. It's something which faces us as researchers today. The Victorians, too, thought they had found the holy grail, as it were, of research. Once catalogued and assessed, like so many butterflies on a card, real history could be written. And the electronic age is doing the same, except it's a more democratic approach. The Victorian was an elitist approach. Perhaps we are now in an age of democracy, in this sense. This process has to be seen and praised for its positive developments. It also raises philosophical questions for individual historians and also the subject itself. The experience of early modern researchers in particular, as referred to myself, is today not that of 10 or even 20 years ago. A new skill, a new way of looking at the text needs to be inculcated, and particularly at the ground level, in the early stages of academic life, the undergraduate. What I'm going to talk about a little bit later on is the teaching strategy, perhaps. And even if we're not as confident as Acton was that nearly all the evidence is available to us, we're reaching something of a nirvana or even a paradise for certainly early modern historians. Reflecting personally on this, since I began in 1984, this process of use of historical text in electronic format changed radically. It spilled over into other areas in which research moves, not only teaching the undergraduate and postgraduate, but into the local history society, into the world of the family historian, and into the popular mind. Thinking about 10 years, not just 10 years, perhaps 20 years, when we first started off, we had to turn up at the archive suitably armed with a ticket, obtained by a reference from our supervisor. In my case, it was actually handwritten. Armed with pencils and notebook, ready to transcribe manuscript resources, printed sources, found by using the heavyweight boot. Use is now more commonly seen arriving with digital cameras, computer skills, laptops at the British Archives. Is this a bad thing? Not necessarily. Does it change our sensibility towards the text? Probably. Here, I found myself a few weeks ago in the British Archives, as I must now call it, not the Public Record Office, surrounded on one hand by somebody using a laptop, on the other hand by somebody using a digital camera, and I'm armed with a pencil, and I'm thinking I must be going wrong somewhere here. But surely this is changing sensibility towards the documentation. Material form changes the questions asked. This is one of the challenges which we face. Cleo now can sit at home, if she chooses, reading on the computer all of this material, or the majority of material. She can sit there 2 a.m. reading it if she so chooses to do so, or will be soon able to. She has a virtual key to the archive. In addition, downloadable and ever more sophisticated electronic versions of material allow for more highly developed searches for the historian, people, places, vocabulary, concepts. Who remembers the old carte papers of the Duke of Ormond, the Bodleian, for example, which were nearly impossible to use? You had to go through green-bound and rather neglected files of 19th century handwriting. Now I find, and most amazed to find, courtesy of a project based in Oxford, we have access to a searchable database, making something which was difficult to use, but now transcribed and fine-tuned so that we can search through it. And this will be a change for many of the older style historians, if not for the ones coming through the undergraduate, postgraduate courses. We can search and explore the text in a way which was previously impossible, opening up. Time and space are constrained, which are constrained in a busy world, have been given to us to use again. In addition, the once privileged access to primary materials has broken down. Indeed, in many areas, local record offices in particular, arguably the barriers have gone completely. The amateur, the lay historian, is the prime mover in this. They are demanding access to electronic sources, the census, etc. Family historians are at the forefront, and find a seat if you can. Experiential difference then between what was it before and what is now. One of the things which I concentrated on as an early modern historian was the use of early EBO, this massive database of 125,000 works published between 1473 and 1700. This has resulted in a fundamental change in working practices. No longer do I have to go to the British Library and use a rather rickety microphone, which always makes noise and interrupts other people's work. You sit in the office and use it. It's a benefit, then. More significantly, perhaps, how do we turn this benefit not just to ourselves as academics, but also to those undergraduates? Not just in special subjects, perhaps first years. The democratic access to material has in fact spilled out into the undergraduate world. We talk to them of our research, and they in turn, quite frequently, talk of theirs. Yet, there are problems. How do we approach this massive database, this massive idea for an undergraduate teaching practice? Faith in the electronic materials which are provided to us, of course, but training not just in the technicalities, but also in the values of the historian are still there. How do we go about it? How do we release the undergraduate into this potentially 125,000 pamphlets? You just say, there it is. No, we have to have managed and controlled academic skills inculcated. We must think about embedding, to some extent at least, some of these electronic sources, not only in the teaching practices, but also in the actual assessment practices which we carry out, allowing them to reflect, to explore, to write about pamphlet literature, this vast cultural literature from the mid-17th century. providing tutorials in order that they can formulate their own questions. And to some extent we've done this, I've done this myself. The novelty of this is that rather than draw on rather old material from the usual cohort of perhaps printed secondary sources, we can now allow students to reflect and research in the more unfamiliar. Rather than study Milton, we can study contemporary ballads and poetry about the Rump Parliament in the late 1650s. Verse otherwise not available 10 years, 20 years ago. So we have a variety of different challenges at the undergraduate and postgraduate level, but also across the board. We can approach this from a variety of different ways. One of the things which I've been trying to do with my undergraduates is to try and explain to them how texts themselves are born, how they are created. To some extent, I'm not overly worried about the fact that we're not dealing with originals, because in my lifetime, I'm sure everybody's lifetime, for instance, the Thomason drafts have never been in the original. They've never been accessible. But what we are seeing, arguably, and this is a challenge which will face us all over the next 5-10 years, is increasingly a democratization of the text as text. It has become accessible almost to anyone. To the student, to the professional, to the amateur, to the teacher, to the school child, to the members of the public who wish to use it. There are questions which arise from this as to whether the sort of delivery of this information, particularly in the HA environment, will ultimately be shaped by the electronic makeup of the text. Not all institutions can afford originals. Some rely heavily on this area. But the ideas are still there, the exploration is still there, and history and the exploration of history is still there. And I think these challenges are to be taken on, but also to be praised. Elton said it a while ago, and still correct. Far more history than is written remains yet unwritten. We are still a long way from the evening of our labours. You might think in 2005, however, we might be just at the midday, or perhaps the high noon, as we approach these new areas to explore.